From Cheyenne to Cody, from Gillette to Rock Springs, this is Let's Talk Wyoming, your weekly double dose of Wyoming politics. Because politics may be complicated, but we're here to break it down and help you make sense of it all. I'm Amy Edmonds, a former legislator from Cheyenne. Thanks for being here. Everybody, welcome back. Hope you're doing well. Spring is beginning to spring itself here in Laramie County. I don't know how you are in the rest of the state, but it's been some really gorgeous days. This session has ended. I hope everybody's been catching up on what they maybe got behind on. For the rest of you, yeehaw, Wyoming, saddle up for this one, because our state has just wrapped up its 2025 legislative session, and the drama did not end when the gavel dropped. Boy, did it not. The governor pulled out his veto pen, I mean, like some kind of six shooter in a Western, and started firing. And if you remember, there was a lot of chatter before the session ended about staying a little longer, and they were concerned about possible vetoes. So we're going to get into it. We're going to get into the veto that they were worried about and whether or not it happened. But if all that drama isn't enough, I want to talk a little bit more about what our governor's up to. He just hopped on a plane to DC this week to sort of brag about Wyoming's shiny new foray into Bitcoin. I know he did a fireside chat last night in DC. I have not listened to that yet, but I will, and we'll talk about it in another show. And this is about, you know, Bitcoin, you know, the one with the high profile billionaire. I think you all might have heard, and if you haven't, I'll talk a little bit about it, who Charles Hoskinson, who helped design it, but then got booted out at the last second. We'll go into a little bit of that. So yeah, that's the guy. So we've got vetoes, we've got crypto, we've got power struggles, and we've got the governor who's out there playing both cowboy and like coder, like nerdy coder guy. So let's get into it. Mark Gordon wrapped up the 2025 legislative session the best way he could do it, I think, by vetoing a whole bunch of stuff. Listen, I think everybody knows that the vetoes, there was a target-rich environment for an awful lot of vetoes. There was a lot of stuff that I think was not ready, as we say, for prime time. I think that's part of the job. He let an awful lot of things go through that I think some folks are very disappointed about. I've heard from a lot of people who wished there would have been more, but certainly there was some. So among the casualties was the one that everyone was talking about. It's the one that folks sort of thought about staying in session. I know the Speaker of the House and was thinking about keeping them in, and that is the SAPA bill, the Second Amendment Protection Act. That bill is dead. The governor vetoed it. It's a proposal as well. It's a Second Amendment bill, obviously, which, you know, those things are very, very hot. So the governor gathered in the Capitol after all the legislators were gone just a week or so ago, and held a ceremony with law enforcement by his side, which I think was a really clever move on his, part. He signed a letter vetoing Senate File 196, which is the Second Amendment Protection Act. He called the bill overkill, that would punish first responders and that threatened the cooperative work between Wyoming law enforcement and their federal partners. In the press release, and I will read his quote, the governor says, "This act takes aim at and potentially vilifies law enforcement if, in the process of working to apprehend, prosecute, and detain illegal aliens, drug mules, human traffickers, abusers, and other miscreants, they cooperate with the federal government and a gun is involved. Wyoming can do better," the governor wrote. And he vetoed it, right? So Not surprised. I think there was a lot of details inside that bill that still needed some work, and obviously that's what the governor wanted. I think a lot of folks were wondering if the Speaker and the President of the Senate would call them back into session to override the veto. Became abundantly clear right away that probably wasn't going to happen when the Wyoming Gun Owners Association, this is Senator Anthony Bouchard, former Senator Anthony Bouchard's organization, the Doar brothers, Aaron Doar, I think, put out a statement saying, something along the lines of, we won't forget this and we'll work to pass it next time, which sort of, I think, alluded to the fact that they were aware that the chambers weren't going to come back in and try to override it. And, you know, it's a big call to make, right? To call both of the bodies back in. It's expensive. It's going to cost the taxpayers a lot of money. While, you know, we're all strong Second Amendment supporters, I mean, most of us, certainly this household is, if you ask my husband, we are very strong, and me as well, very strong Second Amendment supporters. I have never felt this sense of they're going to take something away from me, the way in which a lot of the, you know, the two main gun organizations in the state seem to portray what's happening at the Capitol. There tends to be this portrayal that, you know, they're coming for you, they're going to take stuff, when in actuality, this is one of the freest states in the nation in terms of your right to carry a firearm. I served in the legislature when we passed concealed carry without a permit, and it was a hard debate on the floor. Folks who are not as strong supporters of the Second Amendment or just have a general concern about having a lot of weaponry in the general public were pretty upset. The debate was, I mean, I remember there was yelling at the mic. The debate was, I'll never forget a statement that was made by a lawmaker from Sheridan when he said, you know, my wife will be shot in the back of the head in the mall. Malls. That's funny. Malls are a thing of the past, aren't they? It was that emotional. And yet, of course, and none of that came to pass. Of course, we've had concealed carry without a permit for a long time, over a decade, I believe, since I've been in the legislature. And certainly people aren't being shot in the back of the head in the malls. We haven't seen an uptick in murders. As a matter of fact, we've seen the low crime that we've always enjoyed in this state, and rightfully so. I mean, I, as a strong Second Amendment supporter, believe that a well-armed citizenry is a safe one. But I don't feel this sense of everything is, you know, they're coming for you, it's going to be really bad. I would probably obviously feel that way if I lived in a more liberal state, if I lived in Connecticut or, California or Illinois, I would certainly feel that way, but not in Wyoming. And yet we have these two kind of competing gun groups, the Mark Jones group and then the Anthony Bouchard group. And they tend to, you know, now they're sort of fighting each other, but they tend to bring more and more sort of up the ante bills. Listen, if it's an idea that is good and will help, I think that's great. But the governor, obviously, and law enforcement felt very strongly that this bill had real problems. And I do still think we need to listen to law enforcement, particularly on these bills. Now, that I remember when we passed concealed carry without a permit, certainly law enforcement had some issues and some concerns. And I think a lot of that was worked out in the bill. I served at the time with Representative Lorraine Carberg, who just got elected here in Laramie County as our county GOP chair. Lovely woman, super conservative lady, but also former law enforcement. And she did a lot of work running down those concerns and working on it. So, I think there's a lot to be said. The governor vetoed the SAPA bill. There was a lot of chatter about whether they'd come back in. Obviously, they haven't come back in. That bill is vetoed, which means it's gone and it's not coming back. There was another bill. So the governor allowed, so just kind of circling back to this idea that maybe he didn't veto as many things, he allowed House Bill 156, proof of voter residency registration qualifications, to go into law. I thought his veto letter, the veto press release, he did not veto it. The I allowed it to go into law press release was really good. I'm just going to read a little bit for you, because I thought he explained this bill and it probably helps you all to understand. He said, first and foremost, the governor reiterates his confidence in how elections are conducted in Wyoming. He believes only citizens who are residents of Wyoming should vote, but question the arbitrary nature and the legality of the Act's 30-day residency requirement. The governor noted in his letter that the 30-day residency requirement conflicts with federal law that prohibits a durational residency requirement to vote for the president or vice president of the United States. Whether the federal or state our state statutes will prevail is in a legal contest is likely the question that will be resolved in the courts, Governor Gordon wrote. The governor also noted the act's indication standard for rejection of voter registration might present challenges for clerks to administer with any degree of certainty. He wondered whether the change made through this act are an improvement over the existing provisional ballot process, whereby a questionable ballot is not counted until fully vetted and verified. And then there's a quote from the governor. He says, because it is laudable to continually improve our standards for identification, I'm thrilled that this legislation is now gives the Secretary of State the authority he was trying to usurp by passing rules he had no authority to pass last spring. I read that because I just had to laugh when I read it the first time. It's funny. These two men do not like each other. That's abundantly clear. And the governor is not wrong. The Secretary of State has been running for governor since he became Secretary of State and has most definitely usurped his own authority multiple times. He was the biggest lobbyist at the legislature this session. And I'm talking about our Secretary of State, Chuck Gray. He was the biggest lobbyist at the legislative session this year. Literally, it didn't matter what room a committee was testifying in. There was a huge probability Chuck Gray was sitting in that room and was about ready to get up and testify about something for or against. He spent an unbelievable amount of time doing that. I think a lot of people question, do we want our statewide officials, the executive branch, to be so intimately involved in the process the way he was? I know he's a former legislator and he probably just couldn't stay away, but he's the Secretary of State. So there you have it. The governor goes on in this letter talking about House Bill 156. The will of the legislature is finally clear on this point. Let us remember, though, it is ultimately essential and core to the workings of both our Wyoming and United States constitutions that a bona fide citizen be able to vote without undue difficulty, and that right should not be abridged or diminished as a result of measures taken to conduct an election, unquote. And I mean, the reality is, and I said this earlier on in one of my early podcasts, one of the outcomes of this legislative session is going to be a absolute heyday for lawyers in this state, because come our next election, when somebody is denied the right to vote, and it may very well may happen because of these bills, they will sue. There will be litigation because, you know, as much as the gun groups are outraged at the thought that someone is going to take or do something to abridge your Second Amendment rights, you should be equally as angry at the thought that someone would be denied the right to vote, the most essential right we have in our government, the right to vote, over overly restrictive bills to try and, you know, solve election fraud problems that don't exist in Wyoming. And it'll come if indeed this bill or others is too difficult for our clerks to enforce. And as the governor noted in this, and I read this idea of any indication, so somehow if they have any indication that the residency requirement hasn't been passed, the clerk, the poll, you know, the person working the polls is supposed to deny them. I think that's insanity. I think that's maybe I've overstated it by saying insanity. I think that is deeply problematic. I think it's deeply problematic for the people that have to make that judgment call. And then it's deeply problematic because any indication means that you don't get to vote, which is a denial of the most basic of rights. So, yeah, we will see. But that bill was allowed to go into law. And then finally, the other one I wanted to talk about just quickly was the governor vetoed House bill, excuse me, Senate file 125. This was Senator Sherry Steinmetz's bill. This is a bill that tried to sort of say that it was a pro-life bill. It really wasn't. It was more a legal argument bill, trying to once again interject into what's already a race that has already started and is halfway through the race, which are these legal battles on the trigger bills and the other things that the state has done to try to make abortion illegal in Wyoming, which is something I'm 100% in favor of. But he vetoed this bill, and I, as someone who's pro-life, don't have a huge issue with it. It seemed like a really complicated sort of legal question. What the bill was attempting to do was to prematurely define the term healthcare. If you aren't aware, in the courts right now, it's being adjudicated, this idea. The other side, the pro-choice side, the pro-abortion side, has said that Wyoming's constitution, which was changed when I was actually in the legislature, to define healthcare, that in that definition, that healthcare, in that definition, it also should include abortions, that abortions should be a fundamental right under the new constitutional change. Now, I will tell you, as a lawmaker who was there when that law was passed, and I understand that the state Supreme Court that they do have to take in legislative intent. I'm one of those legislators. I can tell you with 100% assurity that I would have never voted for or supported that bill if I had had any inkling that it was to include abortion. The thought was never there. There was no discussion on the floor about, is this about abortion? Because no one considers abortion a healthcare, a needed healthcare. It is an optional choice to kill your child. It is not a needed thing. In only the tiniest percentages is it. It is not on the, you know, as a rule. So that question is hanging out there. This bill, Senate File 125, was trying to insert itself into a race that has already started and is already well on its way by sort of prematurely defining healthcare. The governor said in his veto letter that this will only, quote, this will only perpetuate, redundant legal challenges, adding to the delay Wyoming has already witnessed in litigating the state's ability to regulate abortion and introduce further complexity into an already robust docket on abortion, unquote. And he's absolutely true. It just seems like there's lawyers with itchy fingers that cannot just stay out of this. The Freedom Caucus has been the worst at doing this, passing more bills to make more changes that have muddied the water. Let's let this work through the process. As much as I would like abortion to be illegal today, we have to now. There's nothing else we can do but let this work its way through the process. I think that's right. I think his veto was a smart move. I think this bill was going to cause more problems. Plus, I mean, that I remember at the beginning, the bill had real issues. Like they had to, the sponsor of the bill, Senator Steinmetz, had to approve and agree with a number of different amendments because the way the bill was worded, they tried to define an abortion as, or they sort of tried to define that healthcare is anything that doesn't cause harm to the body, which, you know, just think about that for a second. The problem with that definition is that chemotherapy is one of the ways that we try to save people when they have cancer, and chemotherapy is deeply harmful to the body. There are other medical processes by which we harm things to help things. And so they had to make all of these, amendments and changes. And that I remember, I think they even put like a trigger in there so that it only affected a certain part of the litigation. I mean, there was a lot of things that the bill was so badly bungled and so poorly written. There was a bunch of stuff that had to be done to it. And now the governor has vetoed it. So it has died and there'll be no coming back for that one. And I should add real quickly, the governor did allow House Bill 32, What is a Woman, to go into law. So that's a bill that a lot of people wanted 2 years ago, this bill that basically is defining what is a woman. It doesn't have any clear policy direction in it. It really is just a definitions bill. It doesn't do anything. So in other words, even your agencies, the university, there's nothing there that directs them to actually apply it in a certain way. So it's a pretty lightweight, do nothing bill, but there was an awful lot of people that got ginned up on social media to think that it was like the end all and be all, and it was going to do something great. And they couldn't, we couldn't live without it. And so it got, you know, it did get, you know, it passed. And now the governor has allowed it to come into law. And I don't think there's any problem with it being law. I mean, I'm not saying that. I don't think, I thought a year ago, it was really stupid of the leadership at the time to just sit on that bill. There's no reason why you shouldn't just act on it and let it move forward. Unless you have a real issue with defining genders, and unless you have a really strong opposition and believe that transgenderism is something that should be upheld in ways that trample on biological women's rights. But otherwise, and certainly you are in a tiny majority in the state of Wyoming. I mean, a tiny minority. And no matter how passionate you might be, I would hope you could recognize you are in a tiny minority. There was really no reason not to bring the bill forward. They didn't. It was an actual election issue that people used. It was a cudgel that they could hammer over people's heads, and they did. And the bill came back this year, and obviously now it has gone forward. The governor did not sign it, but he allowed it to become law. So that's that. So, all right, let's talk for just a second. We're headed into the budget season. our legislators, bless their sometimes questionable hearts, they're headed towards the budget session. And we should be a little bit afraid. They're headed toward the budget session with all the experience and the finesse of, I think, like kindergartners. We just don't have a lot of experience in that, certainly on the House side anymore, and not as much of a depth, although there's more of a depth over in the Senate, certainly not in the House. And so the work of the interim committees begins soon. Management Council meets next week, and they will decide the topics that each of the committees will explore. So there's going to be more to come, folks. Once that happens, that's going to happen next Tuesday. I will follow that and then talk about it next week. There's a whole laundry list. What happens at the end of the session is that the committees, once all their bill work is done, they meet jointly. So the Senate comes over, the House goes over there, and they meet as a committee. So let's just take one, for example, the Ag Committee will meet, and they'll all sit down. There'll be industry people in there. There'll be lobbyist people in there. There'll be just general public citizens, and they get to say, they get to come up and talk. You can have in a meeting like that, you could have a rancher, you know, from, or a farmer from Warland, a sugar beet farmer from Warland, come and testify and say, here's this issue. The problem is this statute, or the problem is this program that doesn't work. I need X, Y, and Z. You could have an industry person come in, the sheep grower, the wool growers association come in and say, we have this issue, we need X, Y, and Z. You could have a committee member, you can have usually the chairman have a list of things that they're still trying to pursue. You can have the Department of Ag, the head of the Department of Ag, come and say, here are our top three topics, you need to follow, we need this, and blah, blah, blah. They then list those out. They rank them. They go, the committee gets a copy of them. The committee gets to put their rankings in and say, I think this should be number one. I think this should be number two. Certainly the leadership in the House and the Senate usually have a say, and they tell their chairman ahead of time, like, hey, this needs to be an issue. This is a topic I want you all to take up. And that usually gets precedence, whether or not it's even, talked about during their meeting or not, although it usually is. So they rank those, they decide, they put them in ranking, they go before Management Council. So all of the committee chairs will be in Cheyenne next week, or testifying remotely next Tuesday, I believe, for Management Council, saying, here are our topics. Each of those topics, you have to realize, in every single committee meeting that is scheduled throughout the summer, costs the taxpayers money. So Management Council is also a budget process for the Management Council members as they work out, how much do we want to spend? How many topics do we want to have them to have? And usually this time of year, when they're headed into the budget session, they want it to be more budget focused and also more agency focused, because every one of those standing committees is the committee of record over that agency. So if you are in ag, you are over the ag department. And there might be other things. There might be budgetary staffing issues, other issues that you need to be having your eye on. And technically you should be looking at that. Some agencies are better at this, some committees are better at this with their agencies, and some are not. I mean, obviously we have a couple of agencies out there, like the Department of Transportation and Game and Fish, that have their own commissioners and their sort of fiefdoms in their own right, and it's harder for the legislature to penetrate in there and to get more deeper in, although some of that has changed thanks to the work of someone I served with in the legislature, Representative, God rest her soul, she has passed, but Representative Sue Wallace, loved her, hated her, she loved me, she hated me, we had that kind of relationship. She was a firebrand and a lovely woman. And she really was she cared passionately about transparency, probably a little more of a libertarian than she was a Republican from up in Campbell County. And she really, really, really wanted to see more transparency in the DOT and in the game and fish and the budgeting process so the legislature could actually have some say over it. That's not always the case. Some of these committees and some of these committee chairmen are a much lighter touch, or just really, you know, love the agency heads and don't really want to be questioning. But some of that work should be happening now because they're headed into the budget session where they're going to be looking over these budgets. They should be going through them with a fine-tooth comb and making decisions. So some of that work is going to be happening. So Management Council next week, I'll keep you posted on all of that. Meanwhile, the county GOP parties have been having their leadership elections, and things aren't going well for the crazy caucus. It appears more and more grassroots precinct Republicans are just getting tired, I think, of the constant fighting and ugliness. And this is what I'm hearing from people that are holding their elections, because they are starting to elect more reasonable conservatives. Like some of these more difficult folks who believe things, as Reagan said, that just aren't so, are getting unelected. So, and you can probably, I can practically hear the Freedom Caucus's folks popping a forehead vein across the state, because they're the ones who claim that they, you know, they have the grassroots, and now, you know, we're all grassroots. But there's some big changes in these county elections that we've been seeing. Like I said, here in Laramie County, we threw out somebody that I think was a very poor chairman, Taff Love, and we elected former Representative Lorraine Korberg, who is a wonderful conservative woman. I served with her. She is just solidly conservative, and she's going to be running the county party here in Laramie County. That's been going on all over the state. Those elections have been happening. I think that's a good sign. Nature is healing itself, folks. Nature is slowly healing itself. Some of the crazy that I have said, my personal opinion is that the pandemic made some people lose their minds. Some of that healing is happening. So governor has vetoed. We're moving on. Management Council will be meeting. GOP races are just about over. They'll finish at the end of March, and then they're done. So those will be done. I think the governor, if he were smart, though, just getting back to his whole vetoing, and I think if the governor were smart and he really wanted to add insult to injury, I think the governor should use the Freedom Caucus's own talking points against them going into this next session and talk more about growing government, undermining transparency. I think there's a lot of things in there. There's a lot of stuff about the Freedom Caucus itself that isn't transparent. I've talked to you guys about this multiple times. I've talked to you about, you know, how their candidates, the people that they've been endorsing, got elected by signing these, you know, filling out these mail, these questionnaires from outside groups like Make Liberty Win or Young Americans for Liberty. And those have been kept secret. The voters don't get to know. The very people who are going to vote for those don't get to know. The membership of the Freedom Caucus, the actual who are members who aren't, you can be a member and not have to say it. That lack of transparency. Those things need to be basically turned over and against the Freedom Caucus. If the governor, if he was smart, would start talking about these things and saying, listen, you guys aren't transparent, right? Rules for thee, but not for me. That's you all. You all say you're these awesome conservatives, but you hide your members, you hide your decisions, you're sending out daily spreadsheets on how to vote, you're on Signal apps telling each other how to vote. In the moment, on the floor, when you're voting, you're doing all kinds of shady stuff. And you're saying you're not, but you are. Like, the governor should, I think, if he were smart, and it would be chef's kiss if he did. I'm fairly certain Governor Gordon is going to take direction from me, but that's my piece of advice today. All right, so shifting real quick, and then we'll wrap this up. Governor's in D.C., or was in D.C. He might be heading home today. I'm recording this actually on Friday morning. I'm a little late on this, but he was in D.C. So after his sort of veto palooza, what does any good governor do? Well, he packs up and heads to DC to talk about, of all things, stable token. Yikes. Some of us are still trying to figure out what in the heck happened. The governor, Gordon, is in the nation's capital this week, and he's pitching Wyoming as America's sort of crypto cowboy thing. He's talked about how Wyoming is pioneering a new stable-backed digital asset. It's called WYST token. I don't know if the nerds have like a better name for it, but it's been a bit of a nightmare fuel for economic traditionalists like myself. I am not a huge fan of any of this. This thing is supposed to be a stable coin tied to the US dollar and backed by state funds. And allegedly, it's going to make Wyoming a blockchain capital. But what in the world could go wrong? Well, what has already gone wrong? All you have to do is ask Charles Hoskinson. Like I said earlier, this has become an issue, right? So if you're not a crypto bro, or you don't spend your time yelling about decentralization on Reddit, which I do not, I'm not a huge Reddit fan, you might not know Charles Hoskinson. He is a billionaire. He's the founder of Ethereum, the head of Cardano, and until very lately, he was Wyoming's basically favorite crypto guest star. Like he was the guy, right? He bought a ranch in Wyoming. He has tech people here. He's practically tattooed decentralization or die on the Tetons. And more importantly, he wanted in on the state's new Bitcoin-style project. Like, I think this was his baby or something he considered his baby. He was very much a part. He's invested money in the state, folks. He's given money to the University of Wyoming. And he was very involved in this. And for a hot minute, he was in. His company, which his now company, Input Output Global, was a front runner to partner with the state on building this stable token. And then, boom, like that, gone. I mean, like at politicians' campaign promises, he was eviscerated. It was very last minute. It was very odd. I haven't talked at great detail about this. I don't want to get too into the weeds over it. But it was supposedly a procurement issue during the bid process that sort of kicked him out. They said that he didn't have what they needed. But I will say this smells a lot more like politics than policy in some instances. The governor's office has given half answers. I'm not completely convinced with everything that's been said about what happened. And I want to be clear, there are no winners and losers here. This is a rich guy who didn't get what he wanted. And this is a project the state has to try to create a stable token that I think the feds will come in and regulate anyway. So I don't have a dog in this fight, but it is a fight that's happening. And I think it's big. Hoskins, of course, naturally is not thrilled about this. And he has he's a billionaire with a lot of money. He went on X, that's Twitter for the rest of us, and he just went full scorched earth, right? Like accusing the state of backroom dealing, playing favorites, pretending to be tech pioneers while acting like a small town HOA board or something, you know, right? It's not good. It's not good for the state. Now, since all of that happened, Mr. Hoskinson has also announced that he's going to form a Wyoming Political Action Committee, a PAC. And he says he's going to dump $6 million, which is, it's probably what he spends on his morning coffee. It's a tiny drop in the bucket to the amount of money this man has. He's going to drop $6 million. But $6 million in a Wyoming election is a whole lot of money, folks. And here's the real kicker. Wyoming has spent the last few years selling itself as this big crypto-friendly state. I mean, we wrote laws. We invited this billionaire guy and others. We've done the press stuff. And now we're turning around and just ghosting our biggest blockchain booster. I mean, just ghosting him, which I think is, I don't know. I don't understand that. It does not make sense to me politically. Yeah. But getting this PAC up and going is going to make a significant difference in these races in the future in Wyoming. I mean, $6 million is a lot of money. And of course, the Freedom Caucus, remember them, I think they're split a little bit. I think some are mad at the crypto efforts and don't like them. And I think others want them. So I think Gordon is kind of out there trying to thread this needle between the sort of tech innovation and then old school fiscal conservatism like mine. And I think nobody's that happy. I mean, just gonna be honest with you. I suspect that I think a lot of folks don't know what it's about. And when they do, they don't know anything. They don't know enough. I mean, the biggest problem I see in crypto still to this day is that there is absolutely no way to sit down with my mother. I'm going to use her as the example, a pretty savvy woman. She's not that elderly. She's only in her early 70s, spry and does a ton of stuff. There's no way to sit down as an asset manager and explain to her how or why she should invest any of her money in crypto. In less than 10 minutes, it would take you a long time to get her to understand it. I cannot explain it to you. And I have read and tried to study, and I think because it's so beyond the grasp of what we understand monetary policy is, right? That it's really difficult. So we have the crypto range wars. Hello. That's what's happening in Wyoming. We've got Charles Hoskinson, and he is madder than a wet hen, and he's coming, and I can't really blame him. I think, getting kicked out like that, not a great thing. I think he has every right to be angry. I think the process may well have had some issues, and here he is. We've got the governor plowing forward, picking winners and losers, deciding. We've got this committee. The legislature is fully invested right now in the whole crypto thing. So I'm calling it the crypto range wars, and that's what we're going to continue to see. I will give you updates as we see new events happen in the crypto range wars, Wyoming edition. So that's it, folks. Final thoughts. I'll just review. Governor Gordon vetoed some bills. He flew to DC to promote crypto. And Charles Hoskins is angry. We've seen some great changes in state or in county GOP elections. These folks that they're electing are the people that go to the state party and do stuff at the state party. So I think that's great. I think that's a good sign that nature is healing and things are perhaps returning to a bit more normalcy from the usual stuff. What I didn't touch on today that I just haven't had time, but I will try to touch on it, and I'll say this much about it. Nature isn't healing itself in U.S. Congresswoman Harriet Hageman's town halls across the state. As a matter of fact, they have been so raucous and so angry and filled with so many people that want a small piece of her hide that she has now canceled them. So not going to get into a huge amount on that, but that is what happened. So I guess there's still some anger seething out there from people who still have issues. I don't think that changes ever. That's part of nature. Angry people are part of nature, but which is why I didn't really think I wanted to talk a huge amount about it. She has canceled those town halls. She's moving them online to teletown halls for anyone who was waiting with bated breath to go to the one. You can probably reach out to her office and figure out how you can get on the teletown hall if you've got something to say to her. All right, folks, that's it for this week. I hope you're all well. The weather has been absolutely glorious. I hope you get more opportunities to get out and enjoy it. It's going to be changing here in Laramie County. And hopefully, I don't know about you all, but hopefully, I am praying we get some rain or snow. I don't particularly care, just moisture. Until next time, guys, take care.